A little over a year ago, I talked about a potential problem in the New York auction world. Auctioner William A. Janak sold a 19th century silver enamel box, apparently the work of a Russian silversmith, for $400,000 to a man named Albert Rabizadeh. Or at least the company thought it sold the box. Rabizadeh, for some reason, decided to renege on the deal, hiding cleverly behind a provision in New York's statute of frauds. Quite apart from just the $500,000 at issue, with commission and taxes, the price tag was north of $490,000, was the ability of auction houses to carry on as they always had. You see, the New York statute of frauds requires both parties to this sort of contract to be named. In the case of this auction, as with many others, both the buyer and the seller are represented by numbers assigned to them when they register, and so not obviously referred to by name. Rabizadeh tried to hide behind this rather specific statutory provision. Initially, the trial court sided with the auction house and common sense. But in late 2012, as I noted, the appellate court reversed that decision. The court found that the information about the buyer and seller, while it does not have to be in one document, does have to be pieced together from many different ones. So in this case, even though Rabizadeh was represented by a number on the clerking sheets, he had filled out and signed an absentee bid form, so it was possible to get his name from that, and New York law was satisfied. But the same thing was not true of the consigner. If he or she filled out a form like the ones purchasers do, with name and other information the auction house did not have or simply refused to produce such a form. Whatever the reason, the effect is the same. The appellate court found that the auction house did not hew to the letter of the law, even if it was well within the bounds of the spirit and auction tradition. So Rabizadeh won. But that didn't seem to sit well with the court, so it did the auction world a good service with a footnote. The court noted that it did not rule on whether the name of the auction house itself, instead of the name of the consigner, was sufficient to satisfy state law, because the auction house did not ask it to. Footnotes like this are sometimes judicial throat clearings. That is, hey, plaintiff, why didn't you ask us about this so we could have let the right party win? And it was clear that each court in this case felt that the auction house, not Rabizadeh, was the right party to win. So at Janak's appeal, the court finally got to the right question. Could the auction house's name stand in for the name of the consigner, simultaneously satisfying the statute of frauds and preserving anonymous auctions? Yes, it could, the High Court ruled, referring back a century and a half to another New York court that dealt with the same issue and found that the auctioneer could count as the consigner's agent for the purpose of the auction. So the anonymity of the consigner can be preserved. But more interesting still, the High Court, like the one below, didn't stop writing after it made its ruling, instead adding its own little editorial jab at Rabizadeh by way of a quote from a 50-year-old case. Quote, "The statute of frauds was not enacted to afford persons a means of evading just obligations, nor was it intended to supply a cloak of immunity to hedging litigants lacking integrity. Nor was it adopted to enable defendants to interpose the statute as a bar to a contract fairly and admittedly made," unquote. I'm Travis McDade.